Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Don't Leave It All to the Men, a series of stories from women in Waitaha, Canterbury, about their experiences in local body government. The stories were recorded by the National Council of Women, Otatahi Christchurch branch.
In this episode, Louise sits down with current city councillor and mayoral candidate Sarah Templeton. They discuss Sarah's journey from being elected to the Hagley Ferrymead Community Board in 2013 to successfully challenging online bullying and harassment that she and several other female politicians have faced.
So Sarah, just to get started, just can you tell me a bit about your life at the moment?
Kia ora Louise. It would be fair to say that life is busy at the moment. And while sometimes people take that as a bit of a badge of honour and it shouldn't be, actually it's a good busy. I'm really enjoying life at the moment. So I've got my full-time role as a city councillor for Christchurch City Council, and I'm also running a mayoral campaign for the local body elections in October this year.
You say that you are enjoying it, which is great to hear.
I am. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I've always enjoyed my councillor role, and when I put my hand up for the mayoral role at the end of last year, I did initially think it would be a bit more of a sort of endurance-y kind of slog. But actually, I'm very relieved to find that I'm really enjoying it.
So what made you decide to stand in the first place when you first stood for council?
So actually, I first stood for community board back in 2013. I'd been doing a lot of volunteering in my local community in Heathcote Valley after the earthquakes, helped start a community garden and was involved in that post-quake response in Heathcote Valley, which was lovely. And at that point, I was sort of shoulder tapped, as is often the way for women, to stand for the local community board, which was great. So I got elected in 2013 and chaired the board for 3 years. And that was Hagley Ferrymead, and it covered the central city of Christchurch, which had been devastated from the earthquakes, all the way out to Sumner and Godley Head. So it was the kind of southeast of the city, which was quite badly damaged, and the city centre. In 2016, the ward layout changed, and we moved to single councillor wards, and I was asked to stand by, again, members of the community for the newly formed Heathcote ward. So I did that in 2016 and was successful, which was great. And that year I was the only person to unseat a sitting councillor and have been a city councillor ever since.
So was there a particular person? You said the community shoulder-tapped.
Yeah, initially in Heathcote in 2013 there were a couple. So sort of mentioned a woman, Claire, and a guy, Danny, who both kind of lived in the area and had seen the work that I'd been doing and said, hey, you know, you've managed to help save our local library. Imagine what you could do if you were on the community board.
You said it's perhaps post-Christchurch earthquake that encouraged you to come and do volunteer and community work.
Mm.
When it came to sort of the city council role, was it just a follow-on thing, or was there another situation or event that you thought, actually, I really should be doing something in the council, you know, I really should go for the council?
I guess it was a mix of things. I did find that as community board chair and seeing the types of papers that were coming to our board, engaging with councillors and the processes at council, that I worked out that I could understand the processes really well, see where there were gaps in processes, and could get changes through, which I found really empowering and really motivating. And one of those was around Trees for Canterbury. So they'd come to us, or staff had come to us with a report to extend the lease that they had over some land, Charlesworth Reserve. But the report said, you know, they are a commercial operation and we should be charging them $17,000 a year. Which was quite a lot more than they had been doing. And they were a social enterprise, you know, and they do a lot of work in the environmental space. They give away tens of thousands of trees every year, as well as growing them for sale. And they go into mostly around Canterbury, a lot of them in Christchurch. And they employ people who have, you know, various struggles in their lives. And they do good in our community, and they were going to be charged at commercial rates. And yet 2 weeks later, I mean, the board disagreed and we made some changes there. A couple of weeks later, a report came to us for a sports group and it said, well, because they do good in the community, we'll give them a discount. And there was, it turned out that there'd been some processes years ago where council had put in a specific policy for sports groups, but they hadn't done it for other community groups. And so I managed to get some changes there, which meant that community groups, not-for-profits, social enterprise, were able to get much cheaper leasing and renting rates from council.
Was this while you were on the community board?
On the community board.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was really encouraging. And I, you know, a few more things like that that made me realise that I could step up into the next level and make more of a difference in that space.
And we think about your election campaign, and I'm trying to think how many you've had now. One, a couple community boards?
13, so I've had four.
Four election campaigns.
Yeah.
Okay, so just generally about election campaigns, can you sort of talk through how these work or how they go?
It's the weirdest thing. They are a very, very public job application at its heart. And there's a lot of things that are really uncomfortable. Large billboards. Not only is it really uncomfortable seeing your face, you know, 1.2 metres high on a billboard, but it's really uncomfortable going and knocking on someone's door and saying, can you put me on your fence, please? And yet those things need to be done. And that's uncomfortable. Fundraising is uncomfortable. So there's no public money involved in elections. So candidates have to self-fund. It can be quite expensive. So I was, you know, an at-home mum with three small children for my first campaign for community board. And that campaign cost $2,000. It's a big investment to make if you're not sure you're going to win. And that was quite daunting. My election to council over a smaller area but higher stakes cost $7,000. Although my opponent spent 14, and you're allowed to spend 20. You know, there's an advantage if you have access to money for campaigning. And that was the first election I did some fundraising, and I actually got over myself a bit and put up a couple of Facebook posts and asked people if they would be willing to donate to my campaign. And I got about $3,500 worth of donations, which was just lovely. And it's not only useful to help pay for things, but it's a lovely, I guess, moral support as well. You know, the fact that people are, they're willing to put their own money towards your mahi and what you stand for because they share those values.
So how does that help the mahi? What does it do in terms of the campaign? Is it able to pay for more visibility?
Mostly visibility. So it's things like paying for billboards, radio advertising, newspaper advertising, those kind of things. There's design work that goes in as well, that kind of thing. So websites, yeah.
And what about the photograph? Quite a few people that we've talked to said, you know, that the photograph thing is really important, but really, as you framed it, can be uncomfortable. So how does that work?
It is uncomfortable. And I was like, I looked up some stuff about photos beforehand. So my very first photo was just one my sister took, specifically for the campaign. And we got some of the stuff right. And it's nice. And I look a lot younger than I am now. I still have one of those billboards at home. But it is difficult. You know, you have to look, I guess, engaging and friendly, but also professional. I think it's probably more difficult for women to know exactly how to, you know, how to pitch your photo. Yeah.
How do you think people react to the photos? Do you think there's a difference in the way people react to the photo of a woman or to a man?
I don't know. And I think sometimes, I think I've got to the point now where I think we overthink it too much. And, you know, in the past I've been super careful about what I want to wear, all those kind of things, and a bit of makeup. And then I look at my 2016 billboards, my photo, and I'm like, oh God, how did I ever get elected? And yet I did. And so that gives me more confidence for future elections and to take it a bit easier on myself when it comes to the photo. We don't like photos of ourselves generally, but I'm being a bit easier on myself now trusting others' opinions more. You know, if you've got a group of people or a couple of people that you trust their opinions of you as well. Yeah.
And the other part of the election campaign that a couple of people have talked about is the little blurb that you have to write about yourself.
Yeah, 150 words is not very much to try and encompass not only your track record, and that's the thing that builds trust with the community, what have you actually done over time, as well as your vision for the future, what you want to achieve. 150 is... it is just simply not enough. So you have to be able to find other ways to communicate with people as well.
So did you have something in the way of flyers or things that you handed out? Or
yeah. Just... so all of my campaigns so far, I've had just a simple, like, old DLE flyer. So it's a third of a piece of A4. And I've hand-delivered those into letterboxes across the ward and had volunteers to help me for the last few elections too, which has been really good. And on those, I've had a similar format each time, and it has shown, you know, there's a bit like an introductory sentence, and then there's maybe 3 or 4 points showing my track record, and then 3 or 4 points that are my vision for the future, those sort of strong advocacy roles, where my values sit, and some nice photographs, not just of me, but of the spaces and places that people love.
How does it feel to be, you said it's difficult to knock on the door and ask someone to put a billboard. What about when you're going and delivering flyers? Do you do that on your own, or do volunteers go on their own? Or
yeah, they tend to. I think people tend to find flyer delivery easier because for the most part you don't interact with people. And so you're basically, you know, and this is separate to door knocking. So mostly leaflet delivery is just walking down the street putting flyers in letterboxes. You do bump into people. And there are rules now. We've got a bylaw since the last election on where you can put your flyers and things. So election stuff's taken out. But there are, you know, for example, you shouldn't be putting them in ones that say addressed mail only if it doesn't have someone's address on it. So, but you're allowed to put them in no junk mail because it's classed as electoral material. Yeah.
And what about the door knocking?
I found that a real struggle. I've done door knocking for others in the past, and I found that fine because I wasn't selling myself. I was selling someone else. You know, I think the key to door knocking is actually to think of it as a conversation rather than departing and, you know, imparting information. So it's about connecting, finding points of shared value, and you get that through asking questions. So it's sort of an introduction, and I'd like to hear more from you about what you want in a council, what you value, and any questions you might have for me. But I remember the first time I did it was in 2016. Yeah, I'm an introvert at heart, and so cold calling, it was really daunting. You know, I'd do 4 or 5 homes and then I just feel nauseous. But it's worth doing, and especially when you know so many people have got your bag and are relying on you to do your part as well as the candidate, I think it's really important.
And what other things do you do coming up to the election campaign? How else do you sort of connect with the public?
I go to a lot of community meetings, community events, but not just in the lead up to the election. I think it's really disingenuous for people just to do it at election time. So I've always gone to lots of community events and met with community groups, you know, right through the whole term. I mean, I got elected because I was already doing that stuff. I didn't do it because I wanted to get elected. And so it's just continuing that. This time round, of course, I'm being invited to more community groups because it's a much larger election. It's across the whole city. When you're a city councillor in Christchurch at the moment, you've got one ward. And so you tend to just visit the groups in that ward, and that's where you're expected to be. But now I'm going across the city, lots of different organisations, talking to Rotary groups, U3A, various residents associations across the city. This morning I was at Community House. I've talked to the WEA, and it's a lot of fun. And it's really interesting finding out more about the really wide range of community groups, not-for-profits, volunteers that we've got across the city.
And what about nearer the election when there are, is it candidate meetings with the public?
Yeah, so they are for the most part organised by community groups. So we get invitations from community groups to come and talk in a candidate event. I've had a couple already. There have been ones where they've had the candidates separately. So I've talked to some Central City residents groups, and they had me there and asked for sort of a 10-minute speech at the beginning and then what was quite a long Q&A session, and it was great. And I am enjoying those too.
Would you say it's quite difficult for someone who is doing it for the first time, you know, the oral speaking, having to speak in front of audience and things?
Yeah, and actually I was sorting through some old election stuff the other day and I came across my first speech from my first candidate event back in 2013. So it was in Mount Pleasant and it was a small group at what was called the Blue Room, which was kind of the temporary community centre when the other one was demolished. And I found sort of the A4 page with my speech typed up on it and little red notes and those kind of things. And I remember practicing it in the kitchen to my small children at the time and incredibly nervous. When I'm nervous, I get all red and blotchy. And I know I did that on the day. But you do get better with practice. And for me, it's been a case of watching other people speak and noticing what I like and don't like, what resonates about the way they speak, and then trying to, I guess, copy that in some way and then fit it to what feels comfortable for me.
Yeah, it can be quite daunting for people. I know the whole idea of public speaking.
Oh, they say it's the top fear that people have. You know, there's three things that people fear the most: speaking, and then spiders, and then death. But speaking is number one, public speaking.
Can you just tell me a little bit about the requirements or commitments of your role now, of your present role?
On City Council, there are 16 councillors and the mayor, and we are responsible for setting the strategic direction for the City Council and the city, which is then implemented by the organisation, and it's a large organisation. And then we're responsible for the oversight of the implementation of that and for a range of decisions that need to be made along the way. And I guess that's at the core of it. Yeah. For me, it has been, probably a 50-hour-a-week, sometimes more kind of job. But we do get a decent break around Christmas time and another couple of weeks during the year of recess as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And how do you juggle it with any other commitments you've got, you know, parenting, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely more difficult when the kids were younger. But it is juggleable, and we have some counsellors at the moment with young children. You know, we just have to cater for that around the table. If someone needs to leave the meeting just before 3 for school pickup, that's just the way that is. And, you know, that's all kind of part and parcel. It shouldn't put people off.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you think being a Christchurch City Councillor is different, that role is different to a community board member?
I guess it's the scale and the localness, if you like, of the decisions that are being made. So the community board is more part-time. So, I mean, when I was chairing the board, I was probably doing 20 hours a week, 25. But a regular board member is probably maybe up to 10 hours a week. And the decisions that are being made are much more local. So they're about parking restrictions, some local community facilities, landscaping plans for various parks, playground upgrades. But the community board can do more than that. So the community board can be more proactive in creating community spaces. So we've got areas within our community board that don't have, for example, a residents association or other groups that really drive activity in the area. And so how do you build that community capacity? And so we've got a project doing that in some parts of our ward, which has been really good. When I was on the other community board, there was a project called Greening the East. So how do you lobby council to get more street trees in an area that doesn't have many? And so that's been really successful as well. the scale of the council stuff is much more metropolitan. It's citywide, higher value decisions that have a bigger impact on the city for a long term. Yeah.
What about in terms of how has the reality of the role, has it been what you expected before you took this on, or has it, you know, surprised you?
There's bits that have surprised me. And I mean, the thing is, you learn a lot as you go. So initially, I didn't even look at council. I was just looking at community board. And I went to 6 or 7 community board meetings while I was thinking about it so that I could see what community boards actually did. And that's really useful. These days, they're all live streamed. So you can go on to the council's YouTube channel or the council's website, and you can look up the meetings for the various community boards or for council, and to watch some to see what happens. So that's a really good way to get yourself prepared and understand what's possible. I also do a lot of talking to people who are interested in standing for various roles, and we have a coffee and we chat through what it's like to do that, and that's really useful too. And you don't have to do that with someone who's a community board member or a councillor in your area. It might be a bit daunting because they might think of you as competition. You could do it with someone across town. So, yeah, that's been really good. I think one thing that surprised me initially when I got elected was that sometimes it's more, for want of a better word, more political than I'd expected, which is odd because we're technically politicians. I've only recently become comfortable with that term. I mean, ideally, you would just have a bunch of people that just want the best for the city, who act with, you know, integrity, put ego to the side, and look at the big picture. And the reality is actually we're all human. And that's, I think you just have to cater for that and build relationships and, you know, work off that.
What about some of the high points of your time in your role? Any specific examples, both as a community board member, although you have mentioned a couple, and as a councillor, have there been, what have been the high points so far?
Yeah, there's quite a variety. And again, they're at different scales. So on that local level, getting our local community centre and volunteer library rebuilt in Heathcote Valley was a real milestone for me, especially because it was, you know, the demolition of our local volunteer library and leading the protests and the advocacy to council on that one that got me first elected. And so seeing that rebuilt was fantastic. Slightly bigger scale, I managed to get rid of library fines. I'd talked to a colleague in Auckland. I'd seen a LinkedIn post that she'd done talking about the impact of getting rid of library fines in Auckland. So I talked to her, talked to the Auckland librarian, and then approached our librarians to see what was happening in our space. The information that they gave me was really confronting about the impact it was having. And so I put up a notice of motion to council to get rid of them, and that was successful. And it has had an enormous impact on so many people. A lot of people, even though the fines can be small, the thought of getting a fine puts them off even going to the library. But now that's gone, people are using our libraries more. And then, of course, after that, we did hold fees as well, which has been good. And then there's the big future-looking piece. When I was first elected to council, I think if I'd said to people, listen, you know, we're going to set net neutral targets for the city and we're going to actively work towards them, I'd have been laughed at. And now it's just part of the BAU for council, which is fantastic. There's been a huge shift in that space. So I was on the adaptation working group as well last term. And I'm now chairing that group. I've got the climate change portfolio, so keeping an eye on what's happening in that space. And this term, we have set up an intergenerational adaptation fund to help pay for some of the larger scale public adaptation moves that we're going to need to make in the future. So kind of like a retirement fund where you build up a small amount of money over time through rates. We consulted on that in a long-term plan and we got really, really good community support. And I think that just goes to show that if you have those more nuanced financial conversations with the community, that they respond to that really well. I think that we don't trust our communities enough to have those kind of conversations around money, and we need to do that more. But, you know, we do have that up and running now, which is great.
And, of course, the opposing question, what's been quite challenging for you in your role?
I guess two things. The first is the pace of change. And on a day-to-day, you know, work, it just feels really, really slow. I mean, when I look back now, the changes we've made, really big. And the 9 years I've been on council doesn't feel like very long, but day-to-day, the pace just seems glacial. And various reasons for that. But that's one big challenge. And the other one has been actually just being a woman in politics, especially a left-leaning woman in politics, and the rise of the online trolling and that other space. You know, I did the Harmful Digital Communications Act thing a couple of years ago and went through NetSafe in the district court and was able to unmask, you know, those behind a couple of fake accounts, which was really useful and set a precedent nationally for some of the stuff you can do in that space, which was really rewarding. But it was really crappy at the time. And I know that that stuff puts other women off standing. And I know that even when women do stand and do get elected, it puts them off engaging on social media, which can be a really useful platform for communicating with the community.
So it's still very much a work on, isn't it? Sure.
Still very much a work on, but at least we're working on it now. Because until a couple of years ago, it was mostly ignored. And I think it's really valuable being really clear and transparent about what the issue is so that it can be worked on.
And important for women who are thinking of standing
to
know that it is being worked on.
That's right. And I think for a long time the fear was that if you talked about it and admitted it was happening, it would put people off standing. But people could see it happening and that was what was putting them off. But I think the way we can do that is actually just to address it, to confront it.
So that's one of the things I guess that's particularly difficult for women as representatives. Are there other things that you think are difficult, more that might be more difficult for a woman than it would be for a man? Or is...
Definitely the expectations are different. You know, everything from little things like got mentioned during a couple of campaign things that I'd worn the same shirt to two different campaign events. And, you know, my opponent at the time had worn the same suit every time. Little things like that that are just frustrating. Someone who mentioned that maybe I should do community board for a second term before I stood for council to get more experience first, even though the guy I was going against went for council and mayor the first time without any community board experience. Yeah, that's been frustrating. Yeah, I think there's the stuff around how you are perceived as well. So I'm generally perceived as a relatively serious person. It turns out that that's a problem for a woman. If there's a man who's just quite serious and does their serious thing and doesn't make jokes, that's okay. That's just who they are. But clearly, taking my job seriously is an impediment. It's just this weird thing. If a man is confident, people assume he's competent. If a woman is confident, they assume she's arrogant. Yeah, you know, those kind of things. And there's a whole pile of research and data around that. And it's that unconscious bias that does get in the way at times. Not always, not for everyone, but it's definitely there.
What about in terms of support? What kind of what support did you feel you needed to fulfill your role? You know, maybe at the beginning and then as you move, you know, as you moved into council role.
It was nice to be able to talk to people who had experience in politics before. And so for a couple of those, it actually just didn't, you know, meant that I sort of emailed someone and said, hey, can we have a coffee? That kind of thing. And so that was useful. And having friends and family encourage me and actively volunteer to help, so, you know, delivering leaflets, that kind of thing, was really good. Being able to have some people who you can trust to give you really good critical advice that is helpful rather than telling you what they think you want to hear or what might not hurt your feelings, I think is really important. And being open to those conversations, because if you want to win an election or you want to do well in your job, the way we grow into that is actually by changing, and knowing how to change and grow is really important. None of us know everything we need when we get into the job. Professional development's really important. Going on courses, learning more skills, learning more about the transport system or how water works, all of that kind of stuff. And there's professional development available, which is great.
You talked about political and how it's quite difficult to be political. Are you, as an independent, is that correct? There are others who have support from political parties who are standing, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So you know, I used to be a member of the Green Party, so I knew people who did political things, which was great. I'm now no longer, but I have stood just as me each time rather than with a grouping. And partly that's because, you know, I was already doing a lot of community volunteering and well-connected in my community when I first did. I didn't feel like I needed the extra backing, if you like, of an organisation. But I think local body support networks via, like, you know, Independent Citizens or People's Choice can be really useful, especially if you don't have any experience in politics or how to go about ordering billboards or getting the right photo taken. I think that can be really useful. It's also useful for the community, I think, because if you've gone through a process to become a candidate for an organisation, it means that the community can trust that you align to the shared values of that organisation, and I think that helps build trust in the candidate.
Is there any sort of support you can think of that perhaps you would have liked to have or would still like to have? Anything specific that you think is you'd still like to have there to help you?
I mean, I've personally developed support networks over time, which has been really helpful. I think the one thing is, though, is being able to access that critical feedback and learning more about that to help people grow. And it is really hard. No one wants to hurt anyone's feelings, especially friends and stuff. Where there is a way for people to provide a support service or a mentoring service, I think maybe for newer elected members, I think that would be really good. Yeah.
Because I can see that would be, if you were a first-time candidate standing, you know, for your community board for the first time, that critical feedback would actually be, you know, quite hard to take when you're at that sort of less confident.
Yeah, and I think for me personally, like, it was a little bit easier because I used to teach, and part of your regular professional development and teacher appraisals and things was actually someone sitting in your class giving you critical feedback on agreed areas, you know. So, and I've done this as a committee chair on council, so there's been times where I've been chairing meetings and I have said to colleagues or a friend who's sitting, you know, in the chamber, listen, I really want to work on this specific thing, this meeting, and I really want to concentrate on this way of chairing. Could you please watch me as I chair and take notes? And that's been really, really useful for learning and growing those skills. Yeah.
And we did want to just, you know, finish by talking about how can we encourage other women to stand.
Yep.
Because we don't want to leave it all to the men.
We don't.
So from a gender equality perspective, or anyway, I don't know, from just being a woman, what do you think women bring to councils or boards? How important is it to have women to stand?
I think it's really important, and not just any woman, but like a diverse range of women. That intersectionality is really, really important. And there's a stack of research that shows that having people with diverse backgrounds and interests and genders in a boardroom or in a governance situation gets better outcomes. And I have seen in the past people say, oh, you know, we've got a diverse board because we have a lawyer and an accountant and, you know, whoever, a manager and those kind of things around the table. But they are all of the same demographic. And having those outside experiences, brains work different ways, is really, really important to get good outcomes. You know, our city isn't all one demographic. And we all should have a voice and be able to see our voice around that, represented around that table, so that the city is designed and built for a future that's for all of us, not just for a few of us.
What are some of the things that you think women might need to have in their skill set if they're going to stand? What are some of the things that you think would help them as a candidate?
Part of it's motivation. If you know what your values are and why you're doing it, it helps. because a lot of the other skills can be learned along the way. So if you are motivated to do good things in your community and to get good decisions made for your community, then you will be more motivated to learn the skills needed to make that happen. So many of the skills I have now, I didn't have when I started. And I have women say to me, oh, I couldn't do what you do. And I'm like, neither could I when I first started. You know, it's a work in progress. It's a progression. It's growth. But the ability to hunt out information and to work out what skills you need, to be self-aware, to know that you do need those skills, and then an ability to pick them up and learn them. So public speaking is one of them. Reading reports is another. Building relationships with other people and having discussions about those issues as you go, you know, into decision making is really important too.
But it is, I think it's an important point that it is a, you know, a work in progress. You don't have it all when you start.
But no, that's right.
People there who can help you
absolutely
learn and grow in the role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, you've touched on this, some of the issues that are particularly related to being a woman in local body government that women might face.
There are people who think it can't be done. Back in 2016, most people didn't think I would win that council election in my first go, because I was a woman coming from the community board and from a community space up against an incumbent white middle-aged male with a business background and name recognition. And I think that people frequently underestimate women, and they underestimate the value of community and community connection. There are people who don't think I can do it this time as well, and I'm looking forward to proving them wrong.
What about for a woman actually, you know, I don't know, around the board table or at meetings or in the community, are there issues that are particularly related to, you know, being a woman when you're...
Yeah, sometimes I don't get taken seriously on anything to do with infrastructure. There were times I was asking, we had one very large project in the city, which is not quite but almost complete, that council has been doing. And in the early days of that project, I had some experience at an infrastructure conference up in Auckland on sustainability at that space, and heard from and talked to some people involved in a very large infrastructure project, City Light Rail in Auckland. And I had suggested to people involved in the Christchurch project that actually building in sustainability into how the stadium was built, not just for the materials, but the way they did the construction, would not only be good for the environment, but it actually would save money, those kind of things. And no one took me seriously. They just didn't. No one called the people in Auckland until I raised it in public, because I'd mentioned it in other workshops and things beforehand. Then they took it seriously and they went up and they visited. I'm like, oh, actually, actually, you're right. And it's been really useful. So that was frustrating, but the right outcome in the end. You know, I think persistence is important in those spaces. Mm-hmm. But you do have to prove yourself in areas that aren't traditionally female more than a bloke would have to.
Have you thought about, or can you think about, how women might transition back into the regular workforce after being in local government? Can you see any issues with that?
It's definitely something I'm thinking about at the moment. So, you know, on the 11th of October, I'm either going to be mayor or unemployed. So I have a little book with some scribbles in it. And I think the transition will be odd. Like, I've started having conversations with people. But the thing is, like, having that there, so that I don't have to worry about it, so I can just concentrate on the election, because I'm not intending to be able to have to use it. I will eventually. Yeah, I haven't had to do it, so I don't have any hints. I have talked to some people who have done it, and they have said it's not easy. Yeah.
And any other tips that you can think of for women who might be thinking of standing, apart from, yes, please stand?
Yes, please stand. Talk to other women who've done it. Talk to friends, family, as well. Talk to your community, some community groups, and have a look online. I guess they're the key things. But just do it. It's actually completely possible. You might not win the first time, but think of that as a learning experience and have another go. You know, I know people, not just women, but men who, you know, have won a council seat on their fourth time It's completely possible and it's worth it. It's a really motivating space. Not always enjoyable, but when I look back at my nearly 12 years being elected now, you know, I can see that I have made a difference, and that's really nice.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Most of the city would say that they thank you for your service, because it is a kind of a service.
It is.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, women actually could be really good at it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, your service has been amazing. We wish you best of luck, all the best.
The National Council of Women's vision is for a gender-equal New Zealand. Find out more about what they get up to and how you can get involved by heading to www.ncwnz.org.nz, emailing ncwnzchch@gmail.com, or find them on Facebook and Instagram. You can find this episode on the Plains Media website, plains.org.nz. Until next time, mā te wā.